Stop laughing. This is erotic.
I'm on a new medication, and I think it's making me hallucinate.
I would have been a Ted Bundy victim.
Yeah. I had no idea that so many people out there felt the same way I did. Now I want a pina colada.
An acquired taste.
This is an Acquired Taste podcast. I'm Bethany, your dehydrated, sopping wet, wearing a black bra under a white t-shirt friend.
And I'm Kathleen, your plant-based experimenting, mad at my Christmas tree, sugar-free vanilla latte addicted friend.
And every week, Kathleen and I meet up to discuss our lives and what's weird in the world, and we invite you to join us. This week, what are we talking about, Kathleen?
Escaping your life and assuming a new identity and exactly how you should do this.
Yes. I'm also talking about all of the myths about the human brain.
Ooh.
I believed every single one of these was fact.
Okay.
None of them are.
None of them are fact.
For example, you know that thing that says we only use 10% of our brain?
Yeah.
It's total false. Completely false. There's no evidence.
But Bethany, if I learn to use that other 90%, then I'm a genius.
No, that's not how that works.
Then I can talk to aliens.
Not that. I was told growing up that if you used all of your brain, you would go nuts. You would go insane because you wouldn't be able to handle all of your knowledge and it would make your head explode.
I recently read that if you use that, like, I'm a righty. If I use my left hand to do more things, yeah. I'll like stimulate certain parts of my brain that are dormant.
Well, that might be true in that it like connects different neurons by making your brain and your hand, that coordination work harder than it normally does.
Yeah.
But it has nothing to do with like what side of your brain you're using.
I'm very much looking forward to it. Can we talk about ugly Christmas sweaters for a second?
Yeah, I'm over it.
Yeah. You know, I love a good ugly Christmas sweater.
Yeah.
I love the parties. I love the kitsch. I love a little jingle bell earring to match my ugly Christmas sweater.
Yeah.
But Teen Vogue just put out an article yesterday that the ugly Christmas sweaters are one of the worst things happening for our environment right now.
Oh, it makes sense because of all the waste.
Well, most of the ugly Christmas sweaters that they're making new, you know, once upon it, like I bought all my ugly Christmas sweaters secondhand.
Yeah.
Like from eBay. They're probably from the 80s or the 70s and they're made with cotton and they're made with real materials. The ugly Christmas sweaters now that you buy in like Urban Outfitters, like Spencer's or on Amazon or something, they're mostly made with plastic.
It makes sense.
Like plastic fibers.
Yeah.
And people wear them once.
And they throw them away.
And then the next year, they buy a new one.
Yep.
Despite already owning like two or three others.
I also didn't like it once the ugly Christmas sweater thing caught on because then they weren't real ugly Christmas sweaters. The whole point was that these were Christmas sweaters that were made in earnest back in the day because people actually thought like this is fun to wear to a party. And then people rediscovered them at the vintage store and thought, oh my God, these are so ugly. We need to celebrate how ugly they are. So making new ones, I feel, defeats the purpose.
It doesn't make any sense. And now there's a lot of brands that have ugly Christmas sweaters, like Whataburger and Red Lobster and like Brita. What is Brita?
Brita?
Brita has an ugly Christmas sweater to promote water bottles as a ho-ho hoax.
Did you see the one that Walmart had to take off its website?
No.
That was Santa doing lines of cocaine.
Stop
it. And it was something about Let It Snow.
No.
Like I am shocked that anyone approved that. I mean, I am not personally offended by it,
no,
but I'm just
neither.
Like shocked that it somehow made it through.
But I don't know.
Had to issue an apology and all of that stuff.
Very bad for the environment. Yeah. Ugly Christmas sweaters.
Yeah. Speaking of reusing, reducing, and recycling, ask me about my pants.
Oh, let me see your pants, Bethany. Stand up. Oh, how cool are those pants?
These are a pair.
Turn around. Is it like a different material on your arse?
They're
stretchy.
It's a cotton on my booty. And like a faux leather on the leg.
They're very cool. They look comfy.
Thank you. I got them at event. I think I got them on ThreadUp again. And again, because I had the whole boot cut debacle, see also two episodes ago.
Yeah.
I had to like quickly get not boot cut pants, but affordably. And so these just came in the mail yesterday.
They're like, cool. You look like a motorcycle chick.
Thanks, man. But
you know
I'm not.
What? It's raining outside here in New York City today. It's also freezing. Oh. And I am pissed that it's not snowing.
It should be.
Mother Nature has no right.
She'll say Mother Russia.
Mother Russia. Well, I am Russian. So that would make sense. Mother Nature has no freaking right.
No.
Has no right to be this cold and for it to still be raining.
I know. I don't understand. Because it should be snow, or give me a sleet. Give me a heavy, sloppy raindrop that is causing some sort of something to stay on the ground. Whatever is happening right now is insane and stupid, and
no
I will not stand for it.
Other things I'm mad about, the Hallmark Channel.
Okay. Would you like
to? I shouldn't be laughing. I'm like nervous laughing. I don't know why I'm laughing. It's not funny.
Do you want to talk about what happened?
Yes, let's talk about what
happened. Because I tweeted about it and I lost a lot of followers.
That's okay because you're just sorting out all those homophobic followers.
Yep,
so.
Those aren't the ones I wanted anyway.
Yeah.
So the Hallmark Channel pulled four ads that were for Zola, which is actually a company we work with as well. It's a wedding planning company.
Yeah.
The ads featured same-sex couples. I believe it was two women. And Hallmark bowed to pressure from a conservative group that had a big issue with same-sex marriage.
Yep.
So they pulled the ads. And people online were not happy about it, and including us. We were really upset because we love a cheesy Hallmark movie.
Of course. I love a cheesy Hallmark movie, but I do have my gripes with Hallmark about not showing enough LGBTQ representation in their movies. Not showing enough people of color in their movies as the leading characters.
Yes.
Like, the funny black friend isn't enough. Like,
right.
Come on.
Exactly, yeah. So you told I didn't stay up to date on it, Kathleen. You said they apologized and they put the ads back up.
They did, yeah. They apologized. They put the Zola ads back up on the channel. And I think a lot more people are now looking at Hallmark through different lenses.
Completely. And I think I want to verify this really quickly before I say it, but there's a reporter in Minneapolis who works for Care 11, and I followed her for a long time back when I lived in Minneapolis. Her name's Jana Shortall. She's an amazing human, and she tweeted something that was a really good point, and I'm vamping right now as I try to pull up her Twitter.
No, I mean, and I was reading some of the Twitter comments about the people who were angry that Hallmark put the commercial back on the channel, and I know it shouldn't shock me at this point in the year 2019, but it still absolutely does that so many people use religious beliefs to cover up their bigotry.
Yeah.
I just can't get over it.
Yeah.
And every time something like this happens, I say to myself, wow, I just can't get over it. And I really shouldn't be shocked anymore.
I know. Most people believe in a quote unquote loving God, but find that as an excuse to be so hateful. Anyway, Jana pointed out that the Hallmark Channel pulled those ads, except Hallmark website, there were like 80 cards that were marketed toward gay couples. So
80 what?
Greeting cards. Like the one that she had is a Christmas card, and it says to a wonderful son and partner. So it's like to my son and his boyfriend or his husband.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
So why is that okay for your cards but not for your
channel? Yeah, because they're making money off those cards.
There you go. And there it is. So there's that about that. Can I open the presents?
Yeah, so this weekend was Bethany's birthday.
It was my birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Are you turned on right now?
Yes.
That was my sexy version.
I like it. So you brought me gifts, which I did not expect, and I panicked because I did not bring your Christmas gift. So I was like, oh no, is today the day? So when we record...
There's
on Friday,
still time.
Okay. So anyway, okay. Which you brought me to? Which should I open first?
Open the pink one first.
Okay.
So they're both sustainably responsible. They're both used vintage things.
I love vintage. Should I do ASMR?
Oh, yes.
Is this the sound of crinkling?
Over 18 ASMR. Will you take your shirt off, please?
No, because I'm wearing a black bra with a white shirt. Oh, my gosh. This is beautiful. Oh, my gosh. Oh my God, I love it. It's a, how do I describe it? It's
isn't it a cameo?
It's a cameo.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, so it's like a
in
gold
resin.
Rope chain.
It's a cameo that's embedded in sort of like a smoky resin. It's a necklace. It's a big
beautiful.
Necklace.
Beautiful. I love it. Yeah, the cameo's, oh my God, I love it. I'm putting it on right now.
And I bought it secondhand, so hopefully somebody died in it and then someone, you know.
And their spirit is trapped in the cameo.
Their spirit is trapped in the cameo, the resin cameo. And
it'll pop out and go, word up, which is an old music joke that only some people will get.
Someone took it off their dead body and was like, let me sell this secondhand on the internet.
I love it. Thank you so
You're
much.
Welcome.
We'll put pictures up of it on our Insta. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I love it.
You're
I love
welcome.
It. You really know me so well. Why are you mad at your Christmas tree, Kathleen?
Because I already had my Christmas party. And nobody else is planning on coming over. So, like, why the hell do I even have a tree?
Does it make you feel happy on the inside
no,
when you see it?
No, because I never light it up because I'm afraid of starting a fire. So, I don't know.
Do you use real candles on it? What are you, a Dutch woman?
No, but, you know, dry pine needles and regular Christmas tree lights. I can start a fire.
Yeah, but you should be watering it so they're not quite so dry, right?
Of course I'm watering it.
No, there's Christmas lights are going to light it on fire.
I don't know. I'm just like mad at my tree. I wish I had more people to come over and see it. I don't know.
Do you want me to come over?
Yes.
Okay, I will come over.
You're going to come over?
I'll come over and see it.
Because before when we were warming up with engineer Rachel, Rachel was like doing vocal, you know, testing the mics with us. And she's like, so what are you looking forward to in the year 2020? And Bethany says, she just like very bluntly states, telling people no, that I don't want to hang out with them.
Why do you automatically assume that was you?
Bethany, I'm sitting right here.
Why would you assume that was you?
Because I had a party and you didn't come.
Because I was sick.
Whatever.
I was sick. Oh.
I bet you were sick from eating raw cookie dough.
I wish. So good. I was sick. I will come to your house and I will climb your tree. Is that okay?
Yes, that is fine.
Okay.
But in case you're wondering if you can really get sick from eating raw cookie dough, I was...
What do you do with your free time?
I was reading an article on tasteofhome.com.
Your favorite hard-hitting news site.
And you know, when you're like a little kid and you're making cookies with your mom or whatever, they're like, don't eat the dough.
Right.
Don't lick the bowl.
Right.
I always lick the bowl.
Same.
Always.
Did I ever get salmonella? Never. Not even
Never.
Once.
So according to this article, there's a pretty decent risk of getting salmonella when you eat raw cookie dough. Like, you really shouldn't. I know you're rolling your eyes.
Hard.
But the CDC is like saying, please, please don't do it. Salmonella lasts 4 to 7 days. It's not just like food poisoning. Salmonella is like the real deal.
Okay.
4 to 7 days with things like fever, abdominal cramps, diarrhea, and a headache. It's not like a 24-hour, I ate a bad piece of chicken thing.
I'm sure that it's not great, but the likelihood of it happening versus the joy that it brings me, and part of the reason that I get like joy from eating raw cookie dough is the thrill. It's kind of like having sex in an elevator. You could get caught at any time. I could get very sick from this, but I probably won't. But what if I do?
Yeah, but what if you do?
What if I do?
It's gonna take you out of work for 4 to 7 days.
Thank God.
Diarrhea.
So, full disclosure, mm-hmm. we work with Instacart.
Yeah.
I love Instacart.
So do I.
But I had a credit with a different company that does something similar.
Okay.
And so I was like, you know what? I'm just going to use this credit.
Yeah.
I will never use them again.
Really?
I will be committed to Instacart because I ordered my groceries. I got a notification that said my groceries had been delivered. I never got my doorbell rung. It was pouring rain. I went downstairs. All of my groceries had been left on my front step where they could have been taken by any stranger. My doorbell was never rung. And when I opened up the package, I had ordered a container of grape tomatoes. The tomatoes were just open all over the bottom of the container.
Are you kidding me?
I had to reach out to customer service. What I'm saying is, Instacart is awesome for a reason.
They would never do that.
I have never had a bad experience with them. And I will be committed from now on, credit or no credit, because Instacart is the best when it comes to getting your groceries purchased by someone who's going to pick the best produce, bring them to your house, not going to leave them and then run away and not even let you know that they're there.
No, Instacart. Whenever I use Instacart, you know, I go on my app, but you can also access it on your computer desktop. I pick my groceries because I've used it multiple times now. They know the products that I like, so it makes shopping online even easier. And they're always in touch with me. Like, the person who's doing my shopping, hey, this is out. Is this a suitable replacement? That type of thing.
Totally.
And I want to let you know, famous people use Instacart because someone in my family drives for Instacart to make some extra cash.
Yeah.
And that person delivered to a famous person.
That's awesome. Get your groceries delivered in as fast as 1 hour or at a time that works with your schedule. You order from the stores you usually shop at. They have both national and local grocery stores. You're not sitting in traffic, no unhealthy impulse buys, no waiting in the checkout line. It's just so much easier.
Listen, it's so easy that my mom can do it.
So try Instacart and get $10 off and free delivery on your first order.
Download the mobile app or go to Instacart.com and enter our promo code TASTE, T-A-S-T-E, at checkout.
That's $10 off and free delivery on your first order today in the mobile app or at Instacart.com. Don't forget to enter our code TASTE. So, Kathleen.
Yes.
How many times have you heard that humans only use 10% of our brains?
That's like a widely known fact.
Yes.
Since you're a little kid, that's what you read.
Yes.
In Highlights magazine.
Yes. And I remember the movie Lucy, starring Scarlett Johansson. And it was like a sci-fi movie. But one of the things I remember hearing is that Lucy uses like 100% of her brain.
So she's just better than the rest of us.
Well, and she can like levitate things.
Ah.
Right. So it's just sort of like sunk into our consciousness across the board that if you hear it enough times, it's probably true, including that. So this is from the magazine Psychology Today. It is 10 myths we believe about the mind that are not actually true. Hence myth.
Okay.
Okay, ready?
Sometimes I actually believe that I can read people's minds.
Well, you probably can.
Like right now, you're saying to yourself, shut the fuck up so I can read my article.
You nailed it. Wow, you are so good. Oh, shut up so I can read out loud. Okay. Number one. It is a myth that your personality is shaped by your birth order. You know how you hear that, like, oldest children are leaders and middle children are peacemakers and younger children are rebels, blah, blah, blah. No,
that's
not true.
Stop it.
Nope. Personality is not shaped by whether one is a firstborn, the youngest, or an only child.
That's false because I'm the oldest and I am indeed the leader.
Yeah, but what is does that have to do with your place or does that have to do with your genetics? Does it have to do with the way your parents raised you? Does it have to do with...
It has to do with me being older.
Doubtful. An investigation from this year found zero support for the theory that birth order has anything to do with how likely a person is to take risks specifically. So that was what that one studied.
Wait, so you're the middle child.
Yeah.
Are you a peacemaker?
Yeah, but I think I would have been anyway, because that's sort of my personality. I'm just more sensitive than I think other people in my family. And so I think I naturally would have wanted to prevent conflict from like hitting my brain.
You should have been in the military.
Nope, not for me.
No, you could have prevented conflict between major countries.
Well, I would have been a diplomat then, not like
Right.
I'm too sensitive.
Too sensitive.
If someone were to yell at me and tell me to run, I would just start to cry.
It was like Charlize Theron in that movie she was just in with Seth Rogen. She's like, she's a diplomat.
But then you have to talk to people. Also, in 2015, German psychologists analyzed data from thousands of people in multiple countries. They found no significant correlations between birth order and traits like agreeableness, conscientiousness, or imagination. And there have been other studies too.
I don't care what the scientists say. It's all false.
There is one good thing.
Yeah.
You're the oldest.
Yes.
One birth order finding that might actually hold up is a slight IQ advantage in firstborns.
Well, yes, that's obvious.
So, but only like 1.5 IQ points.
You know what? My little brother is actually much smarter than I am.
So it just proves everything.
It does.
All right.
Okay. So you come from a very smart family. Like your family, it's like different level. Like I once read a text message that your father sent your sister.
Yes.
And it's like you're all very clever, very witty, very crafty.
Was that the text he wrote in iambic pentameter?
See, most people don't even know what iambic pentameter is.
My dad writes in it sometimes.
And I'm going to ask you a question that you're not going to want to answer, but I'm going to hold a knife to your throat if you don't.
Is that why you brought that knife?
Uh-huh.
Jeez.
Who is the smartest person in your family? Do you think it's you?
No. Oh, no. I think I'm the dumbest person in my family. I think it's a tie between my older and my younger sister.
Really?
Yeah. When I am with them, all I am trying to do is keep up.
Really?
Yep.
I have a tough time believing that because I'm always trying to keep up with you.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. No. They're both brilliant. And they're like, they both have better memories than I have, too. And so they're able to recall facts and it helps in an argument situation where I'm just like, I know I'm right. I just don't know why.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Sex addiction. It's not an excuse for cheating because it rarely, if ever, is actually a thing.
Huh.
Sex addiction.
So there's no such thing as sex addiction.
If there is, it's super duper rare. The DSM-5, which is like the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual of Mental Disorders, it's what your therapist has and your psychiatrist has.
Okay.
Sex addiction isn't in there. There is one psychologist who has 6 criteria that something needs to hit to be considered an addiction. So it has to change your mood. It has to be used to change your mood.
Okay.
Let's think about like alcohol.
Yes.
You use it to zone out or to change your mood.
Uh-huh.
It consumes your thoughts even when it's not around. So like even if you're not drinking, you're thinking about your next drink.
Yeah.
It presents a clear internal or interpersonal conflict. It's causing problems in your life.
Okay.
But it also has to lead to biological tolerance. So you have to keep having more in order to get the same effect
that
you got before.
Sex doesn't do that.
Sex doesn't do that. And withdrawal involves suffering like irritability, nausea, cramps. That doesn't necessarily apply to sex.
Sex also doesn't do that.
Yes. And also, oftentimes when you continue to use the thing that you're addicted to, it doesn't make you as happy as it used to make you. Often for people who claim that they're addicted to sex, sex makes them super happy when they're having it.
Of course.
So they say that this is probably more likely to be problematic behavior rather than an addictive behavior. So sex, gambling, addiction, those are less likely to be actual addictions, more like problem behaviors. Mm-hmm. Here's another one that blew my mind.
Yeah.
People are not left-brained or right-brained.
Okay, but that's...
You don't have a dominant hemisphere.
No.
It's true.
No, this is against everything that I know.
I know. This is why we're talking about this.
Because I'm the creative side of the brain, which
so?
I think that means that I'm the left brain.
Well, this is what they say. They say that the right hemisphere dominates in people who are intuitive. Analytical thinkers are left-brained.
Oh, so I'm the right brain.
The thing that they have right is that the left and right hemispheres do take on different mental functions, but it's insane to think that people rely more heavily on one or on the other.
No.
For most things, both sides of the brain have to work together.
No, yes. Bethany, no. No, I am a right brain because I'm the creative thinker.
Maybe you're just creative.
Which is why I'm good at social studies and language arts, and I'm not good at science and math.
Okay, this is
you
what...
can only be good at one half or the other.
This is what a lot of these come down to. It can be used as an excuse for things that we don't want to do or aren't good at versus...
Yeah, things we don't want to do.
Right. And a lot of these are also used to make us believe that we can pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, which will come up in a second.
Okay.
Another one that's a myth, learning styles. Some people believe that they are visual learners or auditory learners. Not true.
No, I'm an auditory learner. That's why I'm in podcasting. That's why I've always loved audiobooks as opposed to reading.
Just because students prefer to learn a certain way doesn't mean that that's going to help them learn better. That's the key difference. I may prefer to see things written down versus listening to it, but I'll probably still be able to process that information just as well.
So are you a visual learner, you think?
I have always thought I was a visual learner, but I'll still pick it up if I hear it.
Huh.
Right?
Yeah, I guess.
So
I don't know.
Also, they say that it's really dangerous, actually, for this myth to still exist because it could impede learning. People think that they themselves are limited and that they're not going to be able to learn in a certain way. And so then they don't try to learn in a certain way.
Yeah, that's sort of the same theory behind if you believe you can do it, you can do it.
Right.
If you believe you can't do it, then you can't do it.
Exactly. Number five.
I can fly, by the way.
Oh, I believe you.
Thank you.
Multiple intelligences. There's no such thing as a musical rhythmic intelligence or an interpersonal intelligence. High IQ is high IQ. If you're good at one of these things, you're probably good at the other ones because you're just a little smarter. But again, people don't want to think that they're not good at something because they're not necessarily as smart as someone else.
Have you ever taken an IQ test?
I think I had to growing up.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Do you know what your IQ is?
I'm completely average. Whatever average is that I'm there.
100 is average.
Yeah, maybe like 1 point above.
I don't know what my IQ is. I don't think I want to know.
I'm sure I took one sometime. I've taken like an online IQ tests.
How'd you do?
Well, it was a friend's themed IQ test. So I got 100%. That was last night. Because I'm trying to finish the series before it ends this year.
There are no such thing as multiple intelligences, including friend's IQ.
Did you know that their apartment changed numbers?
I didn't.
It was like apartment 5, then it was like 15, then it was 20.
I didn't know that.
I know.
Oh. All right. Have you heard that 10,000 hours of practice will make you an expert?
Yeah, that's why you have to like play the flute for 10,000 hours and then you're good.
Total false.
Yeah, I can tell you that's false.
Deliberate practice alone will not make you an expert.
Yeah, because I've done a lot of karaoke.
Yeah.
By myself at home.
Probably 10,000 hours.
Still not good at it.
Exactly. So this started back in 1993. It was a Florida State University psychologist named K. Anders Ericsson. And you know he's good because his first name is an initial.
Mm-hmm.
He and some colleagues did a study in which violin students were put into 3 different levels. And they were asked to estimate how much they had practiced up to that point in their entire lives.
Okay.
The highest tier of violinists, the average age was 20, said that they guessed about 10,000 hours. That was higher than the average of the other 2 groups. That and other studies have been cited as evidence that practice is the most important in achieving something. But the problem is that the researchers did not take into consideration innate ability.
So just, yeah, natural ability.
Natural ability. So even someone who is 20 years old who has practiced 10,000 hours of violin may not be an expert at it because innately they're just not as good as people who have an innate ability to play the violin.
Huh.
This is one of those things that we want to believe we can do anything and that we can pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. And so I can be just like you. The only reason that I'm not a pro basketball player is because I haven't done 10,000 hours of basketball. Otherwise, I could be just like any pro basketball player. I'm trying to think of literally any basketball player, and I can't think of one.
Daryl Strawberry.
There, I could be just like Daryl Strawberry.
Was he a basketball player?
Pretty sure he played baseball.
Oh, shit.
But you know what? I'm not sure.
Daryl Strawberry. Well, Michael Jordan, he played both.
Oh, but he's better known for basketball.
Daryl Strawberry was a baseball player. So I take that back.
So this whole 10,000 hours thing was also brought more into mainstream because Malcolm Gladwell used it in his book Outliers. He actually coined the 10,000 hour rule, saying that 10,000 hours is the magic number of greatness.
Huh.
So Erickson, the guy who originally came up with this, even he was like, Nah, 10,000 isn't a hard number. That's like glossing over deeper issues. It's too simplistic. But by that point, it had just taken off.
I mean, so, yes, in referring to musicians,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I played the flute for, 14 years. Like all the way up through college, I was in the college orchestra. I suck so bad. And all of those practice hours over 14 years, it's just my ability was not there.
Yeah.
And my teachers and whomever was in charge of grading me always took pity on me.
Well, that was nice.
Because I was trying so hard.
Yeah.
That innate ability, that musical ability was just not in me.
Not there. So there you go.
Ballerinas too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Some people's bodies aren't built the same. If it's a sports thing, my aerial instructor, she has this condition where her hips, she can just turn her hips out and it never hurts her. So like if she's sitting on the floor on her butt, she can just open her knees and her knees go flat to the ground.
That's
and it doesn't
insanity.
Hurt. And it's like a physical problem, mm-hmm. but it also helps her in aerial. I will never be as good as her in aerial because my hips don't do that. And she just has that naturally by luck.
Bethany, if you just practice 10,000 hours, you could do it too.
Right? Okay, here's another one. Now, I actually thought this was real, so I was surprised people didn't. Male and female brains. The brains of men and women differ.
They do?
They do. Now, they talk about male and female as the sex, not the gender.
Okay.
Right? So sex is what sexual organs you have.
Yes.
They don't say what you identify as.
Okay.
So they say that women tend to be more selfless and rate higher on empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Men tend to perform better on tasks in which they mentally rotate objects. Women can better remember locations of objects.
Yes.
Evolutionary theorists say that sex differences arose because men and women face different reproductive and survival pressures.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Okay, I believe that to be true.
I think it's cool.
Yeah.
Men are also much more likely to be diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder.
Yeah.
Rates of mood disorders and Alzheimer's disease are higher among women.
Hmm.
And then when it comes to post-traumatic stress disorder, girls are more likely to internalize and put blame on themselves, and boys are more likely to act out and externalize their behavior.
Interesting.
So it's interesting. There is no single gene for depression, schizophrenia, or any other psychiatric disorder.
So it's not hereditary.
No, it is. It's you have a higher risk of having depression if someone else in your family has it.
But it's not pinned to one specific gene.
Exactly. There's not like a, that's the depression gene. Your brain and your personality and your genetic background are thousands of gene variants that appear like across the whole population of humans.
But it's not just 23?
It's not just the 23rd one.
And me?
And you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bunch. So you can't just point it to one. This one I found really fascinating. We're almost done. The five stages of grief are not a thing.
Stop.
Do you know the five stages of grief? Can you name them, Kathleen?
Shock. Hide the body.
Yeah, three more.
Cry and call your mom. Then you call an expert cleaning company to come and clean up the crime scene.
Yeah.
And then you attend the funeral.
Which
like you're so sad that the person's gone, except you're the one who killed them.
Okay.
Is this, am I close?
I mean, that's one of them.
Okay.
There's actually two different subsections. That's that's the black market one.
Okay.
So the five stages of grief: denial, mm-hmm. anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. When someone close to you dies, you process it. You grow angry. You plead with God to prevent or undo it. You sink into sadness and then you come up to terms with it.
Yeah.
So this was originated by a psychiatrist named Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She used these terms to describe how terminally ill patients anticipate their own death.
Huh.
But she later said in the book that this whole idea of the stages of grief had been super misunderstood. Not everyone follows them.
Yeah.
Not everyone follows them in the same order. The big thing that's happening when you're going through grief is actually really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain works because it's always predicting the future. It's a prediction organ. So it predicts that the person is still there.
Oh.
You have to update your worldview. And so it's painful and it's difficult to constantly have to remind your brain, no, that person's not there anymore. That's where a lot of this pain and grief comes from.
My mind is blown.
Right.
The brain is an organ of prediction.
Like, think about the way that vision works.
Yeah.
Our peripheral vision is often being filled in by what our brain already saw there or assumes is there.
Yeah.
And so the color and the specifics of it, like, I know what your face looks like. My brain knows. So I can turn away. You're still over there in my periphery, but my brain doesn't have to really process it because it knows what you look like.
Yeah.
I think this is why, you know, when you have a clock and it has a hand that's moving, if you look away and then look back at the clock again, it'll take a second for that hand to start moving again. Have you ever noticed that?
No.
It's fascinating.
Oh, I wish there was a clock in here.
It's because your brain, once it's looking at a clock, understands the motion of that hand and so can just fill that in, predict it, and move forward. When you look away and you look back at the clock, it takes a second for your brain to catch up and process it.
I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about because if something is blinking and you look away, when you look at it again, you're like, why did it stop blinking?
Exactly. That's exactly it.
And then it blinks.
And then it blinks. That's exactly it.
And it's like that kind of phenomenon. Yeah, I've experienced that so many times in my life, but I just didn't know why.
That's why. Yep, that's why. And so that's what grief is it's your brain processing that this person that I expect to be there isn't there anymore. And so you can't say it's going to be these five stages. That makes people feel like they're grieving wrong.
And I guess, like, when you're dying and when you're grieving your own oncoming death,
mm-hmm.
your brain just expects to be alive.
Yeah.
But you know that you're not going to be alive at some point.
Yeah.
And so you need to be like, hey, brain.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be around.
Yeah. And it's sad and it's uncomfortable and to have it constantly as a reminder because your brain isn't used to it yet.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
You go to your doctor tomorrow.
Yeah.
He says, Bethany, you have 1 month to live. Would you tell anybody?
Oh, man.
I would.
So
people could get their travel plans in order to attend my funeral.
You know what? It wouldn't have occurred to me not to, except now I'm wondering if I would.
A lot of people wouldn't.
I think I would probably, quote unquote, take a month off and like go hang out with my family for a month.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
My husband wouldn't tell anybody. He would tell me. And he would threaten my life to make sure I didn't tell anybody.
Yeah, because you don't want them to be worried.
You know, and you don't want their pity.
Yeah.
And you're going to die anyway.
Right.
And so the people who you know you need to say goodbye to, you'll spend time with them.
Yeah. And I would hope I wouldn't. Because if someone told me, I would just be sad for that whole month. Right?
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing.
I don't know. I mean, 10,000 hours of practicing of telling people that you're going to die, does it make you an expert?
Maybe it does. I don't know. The last one is attachment style, which is like a parenting thing. And
I thought that was something else.
You know.
From behind.
You know, in front and behind.
I've seen that in Cosmo.
Whatever. Attachment style is an early interaction with parents don't critically determine how people relate to others when grown. I didn't really care. Whatever.
Attachment style. Attachment parenting.
I guess.
That's like when the kids sleep in your bed.
Oh.
And yeah, attachment parenting.
Oh,
like,
okay.
You literally are like attached to your child.
Oh, gosh.
So wait, so say that again. So how does that relate to the brain?
So while many individuals have little trouble getting close to romantic partners, trusting them, confiding them, etc., not everyone relates to other people this way. Some people have a strong aversion to becoming entwined. Others are prone to anxiety about how much they can trust people. Psychologists use the term attachment style to describe how individuals differ in the degrees of avoidance or anxiety they exhibit in their relationships and whether they're relatively secure or insecure about their bonds.
Hmm.
And I guess that the attachment theory was based on the relationship between infants and their caregivers and was like how you relate to your parents is going to change how you relate to people growing up. This thing says that's not necessarily true.
I mean, yeah, there are people out there who want to find partners, who want to be in love, who want to have children, have families or whatever, but they still don't like being touched.
Yes.
And that doesn't mean that they don't want relationships. I think that it comes back to sort of like, what's your love language?
Yes.
And I'm wondering if what, like my first instinct would be like, if you had a very close relationship with your parent or your caregiver growing up, like you hugged a lot and you were always on their hip or you were very physical in terms of touch, that you would be more comfortable with that in the future. I don't know.
And I think that that has to do with it. But they say that that completely takes out of the picture other people in this child's life. So let's say that you have a really awful childhood. It will definitely affect you growing up, but you may also have a teacher that comes in who is able to let you trust again.
Like Matilda.
Yes, like Matilda.
Was it Mrs. Honeybee?
I don't remember.
Yeah, Mrs. Honey something.
So yeah, so they say that it just, it really is like,
there's no correlation.
Right.
Huh.
Right. So those are the 10 things. It's a really interesting article. Again, it's from Psychology Today by Matt Houston, and I'll put the link in our show notes.
Bethany, if a scientist performing an experiment came up to you today and said, I will make you 10% smarter, but you have to live the rest of your life without eyelashes, what would you do?
I couldn't possibly. That's not a life I want to live.
Bethany, you could get fake eyelashes.
I know. No, I totally do it. I wear fake eyelashes anyway. I don't care.
What if a scientist said to you, Bethany, I'll make you 20% smarter, but I need to cut off 4 toes. Doesn't have to be on the same foot.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You would?
Yeah.
For 20% smarter?
I already know which ones I choose.
Which ones?
The big one on my right side. Uh-huh. Problematic toenail. It never grows right. My pinky toe on my right side. Yeah. Also, big problem, doesn't grow right.
Yeah.
And then I would probably do pinky toe on the other side, too, just because let's even things out so my walk-in's normal.
Okay.
And, like, the middle one on the left foot. Right. I don't care.
I mean, yeah.
Whatever. Would you do it?
Yeah, of course. Okay, here's the biggie.
Okay.
50% smarter.
Yes.
But you can never have sex ever again.
I'll take it.
Damn it. Okay.
You know why?
50% smarter, but you can never have coffee or cheese ever again.
Oh, no. No, I couldn't.
Really?
Yeah, no, I couldn't. Because also 50% smarter is going to be the point where you start having a hard time being around other people.
Yeah, because you're problematically smarter.
Right. So I think that the combination of being smarter than everyone and I couldn't have coffee again. No, thank you.
I wouldn't give up sex, but I would 100% give up coffee and cheese.
The only reason I would give up sex is because I think that Dennis, if I explained it to him, Dennis would be like, I get it. And then I would, and then we would probably like have an open relationship.
You could get a sex doll that looks exactly like you.
Just like me. Yeah. Would you do it for losing toes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I would lose toes.
Yeah.
No
problem. What if, Kathleen, 20%, 25% smarter, 30% smarter.
Okay.
You could only ever wear the same t-shirt and jeans again for the rest of your life. You can wash them, whatever, but they can only be the same t-shirt, the same jeans. Well, no more sartorial choices for you.
But what if it's colder? Can I put on a coat?
You wear a coat.
Okay. Yeah, I would do it.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't get to express yourself through fashion anymore.
30% smarter may mean that I can cure cancer.
Oh, you had to take it there and be all benevolent.
And that I would try and contribute to the world in that way.
Now I feel like a jerk.
No, you're not a jerk. I mean, you're already smarter than I am, so you've got a leg up.
No, I'm not. I really am not. Talk to my sisters.
'Tis the season for sustainability. Listen, textile waste is taking the joy out of the holidays. Bethany and I just talked about in this episode how ugly Christmas sweaters are ruining our environment.
Yep, because they're made out of plastic and people wear them once and throw them away.
You know what? That is why we love partnering with ThredUp, because you get to buy awesome, cool clothes that have been slightly used. Sometimes they're like just brand new, secondhand, and you're doing your part in saving this world.
I've been using ThredUp because of my whole boot cuts, debacle. Yeah. And I needed quick jeans fast, and ThredUp was where I went. They are the largest online thrift store on a mission to help you be kinder to your wallet and the planet this season. And you can shop today for an extra 30% off your first order at ThredUp.com/taste.
I mean, everything that you've ever could have wanted, like premium clothes, designer clothes, maternity, plus size juniors, shoes, handbags, accessories, all right there. And I like to do this thing where I'm like, filter.
Yes.
Looking for sandals. High to low.
Yes.
Because you can get some really nice designer stuff for like not a lot of money.
J. Crew sweaters for $20, Coach handbags for $25, Free People dresses for $13. And because it's online, it's a major time saver. So you just click on what sizes you're looking for and it filters all the way for you. Like Kathleen said, you're not going through racks. You're sitting on your couch and ThredUp is doing the digging for you.
So get 30% off of your first order today at ThredUp.com/taste. That's ThredUp.com/taste.
That's 30% off your first order at ThredUp.com/taste. Try ThredUp today. Terms apply.
Bethany, I'm going through a thing.
Okay. Like an emotional thing?
I'm going through a thing and a little part of me just wants to disappear and start a new life with a new identity somewhere else.
I don't think you're the only one who feels that way. I think there are a lot of people who, if they could be perfectly honest right now, would love the chance to just drop everything and start over.
And I'm taking my husband with me. I'm not leaving him behind.
Oh, okay.
He's not part of the problem.
That increases the chances of you getting caught, but you got to do what you got to do, girl.
I know. But, you know, we're doing this together.
Okay.
We had a conversation last night at dinner.
About just dropping everything
about
and
disappearing. Leaving? Yeah, disappearing and leaving.
Okay.
You know, normal Monday night dinner fodder.
Do you need to talk about, like, why you want to disappear? Okay. Or is that for another time?
So, a couple nights ago, I wasn't feeling great. I was like up in my bed at 3 o'clock in the morning. I was on Reddit.
Yeah. The front page of the internet.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And there was like this episode. You know how sometimes like people embed videos, like YouTube videos on Reddit?
Yeah.
And so it was an episode of Undercover Asia.
Okay, which is a show I've never heard of.
I assume that it's not on any network that airs in North America, but it was all in English. So I don't know.
Undercover Asia. Oh, yeah, look at that.
So the name of the episode was Vanishing Without a Trace. And so it was all about in Japan, there's this thing that people do, and it's not all that uncommon. They just evaporate.
And it's their choice. It's not like the government.
Yeah, it's not the government.
It's not the same way people are like disappearing in our national parks.
Not the Japanese mafia.
Okay. Okay.
And there's a term for it. It's something that happens so often that the Japanese language has a term for it, and it's johatsu, which means evaporated people. For this story, for what I'm going to talk about today, I did so much research. I have so many links to share with you. So make sure you check the show notes. And I'm going to reference what I can as I go along. But
man, I'm so excited. I love this kind of stuff.
It is estimated that nearly 100,000 Japanese people vanish without a trace every year. And this has been happening since the mid-90s.
How are there still people left in Japan?
I don't know.
I feel it's a little bit like Murder, She Wrote, where you would think that whole village would be gone by now.
Oftentimes, they leave their families behind, their belongings behind, their jobs. They leave everything behind except for a little cash that they take with them and the clothes on their backs. Now, if you want to change your identity in America, you can't just vanish, right? Like, this works in Japan more easily than it would work for people in America because in Japan, they have stricter data privacy laws.
Oh.
Under the Act of Protection of Personal Information, this was first put into play in 2003 and then it got another overhaul in 2015 after a series of data breaches sort of shook the country of Japan.
Okay.
And then in 2016, they put into place this thing called Personal Information Protection Commission. Okay. So all of that, basically it means is that even if you don't change your name in Japan and you move away and you quote unquote vanish from your previously established life, you can still go about your business as usual because it's illegal for anyone to give away any of your private information.
Oh my gosh.
So if your family goes to the bank and is like, they vanished, they didn't leave a note, we don't know where they are they still using their debit card? The bank can't tell you.
Whoa.
Like the bank can't give any information. Any business that has your information, they cannot say anything about what you're doing, your whereabouts, like what you've been up to.
So you could change your name, but like keep accessing your bank.
Yeah. I mean, you don't even have to change your name in Japan because
you just leave
because there's such strict data protection laws. Now, at one point during this episode of Undercover Asia, there was a scene where there was somebody working at a ticket booth, like a train station ticket booth, mm-hmm. and a private investigator came up with a photo, like walked up to the booth with a photo of a guy that he was looking for. And the laws are so strict that even then, the guy in the ticket booth wouldn't say whether or not he had seen that man. Like, obviously in America, our first instinct is to be like, yes.
I saw that. I want to be helpful.
That man was wearing a black hat and he smelled like cigars.
So But that's different than, like, if there's a crime that has been committed and police need help finding someone, because then by law you have to help them.
Totally different.
But that's different.
If you vanish, the Japanese government treats it like they left. They wanted to leave, and it's we're not going to find them because they didn't commit a crime.
Did the show talk to the difference between if someone is kidnapped, vanished, versus... Like, how do police know the difference?
I think it's a fine line. I think it's hard to tell.
Like, if you're a person who's over 18, you're an adult, and let's say your partner takes you, what's to say that you didn't just do it voluntarily, and so will they search for you or not?
I think that they might search for you up until a certain point, but when it becomes, we need to break into their data. I don't live in Japan. I'm obviously, like, not an expert on what their laws are.
Sure.
But that is my understanding of how and why people can vanish easily.
That's crazy.
In Japan. In America, it's a little bit different. You can't just vanish. You can't.
No.
Because you could, like, look up someone's name on the internet and their address is printed. Like,
and we need a million different IDs for everything. And, like, yes, and there you can find everything.
There's very little data privacy, unless it's the medical field, right?
Right.
Okay, so because then you have HIPAA laws. So really, to erase the old you and start new, you need the government to do it for you. That is the only way to start a new identity completely fresh.
Unless you decide to go off the grid.
Unless you decide to go off the grid.
And, like, move to Murder Mountain.
So, yeah, that's what I have some tips in case you're going to go off the grid. And the government will only really do it for you in extreme cases like witness protection program, mob-related informants, people who are being hunted, that type of thing, right?
Okay. Tekashi 6ix9ine, probably going to have to go under witness protection.
And there are certain instances in America where the government will issue you a new Social Security card, even if you're not in, like, witness protection, if you can prove that you're in danger if you keep using the same Social Security number. If your Social Security number has been stolen and your identity has been stolen, essentially, there are extreme cases, too, where the U.S. government will issue you new Social Security card.
Do I then get a free pass to, like, reinvent myself?
Yeah.
Will they let me just change my name?
Sure.
So, yes!
Speaking of changing your name, in America, that is a huge hassle. The laws are different from state to state. So the good news about changing your name, you can usually do it without an attorney, so no lawyers.
Okay.
The bad news, it's a long process. There's a lot of paperwork. There's filings, there's hearings, and in some cases, you have to publish your old name and your new name in a public newspaper.
No, what's the point?
If someone was really trying to track you down, they could.
Oh, that sucks.
I know.
That seems like a really stupid thing for people to have to do.
I know. So here is what I've learned about living off the grid and building a new life.
Okay.
Number one, you must learn a form of martial arts. If someone is coming after you, you need to be able to protect yourself.
Okay.
Please reference the Jennifer Lopez movie Enough.
Such a good movie. She learns Krav Maga.
Number two.
She has had enough.
You need to drop your accent. If you're going to trick British dignitaries into thinking you're an educated young woman, you cannot sound like a Cockney flower girl.
Oh, good point, Gavna.
Please reference My Fair Lady starring Audrey Hepburn.
It's very true.
You need to hang out where people die, right?
What? What?
It's easier to assume someone else's identity if you're there when they die.
Oh, good point.
But for the love of God, please make sure that they are a moral human being before you go ahead and become them, because you don't want to unassumingly start impersonating someone who's an arms dealer with connections to the rebels in the African Civil War.
Good point.
Please reference the 1975 film The Passenger starring Jack Nicholson.
So you're getting all your information from movies.
Change your appearance. It's essential that you change the way that you look in some shape or form, right? But please do not try and change your ethnicity in any way that's glaringly obvious. People will catch on to you, even if you are FBI agents in hiding. Someone's going to figure you out. Please reference the movie White Chicks starring Marlon Wayans and Sean Wayans.
I dated a guy that was his favorite movie. Gave me nightmares.
It's
so frightening.
How could that be someone's favorite movie? It was so bad.
It was, I couldn't watch it. It was so frightening.
They weren't convincing. It's not.
So scary.
Here's my last hot take.
Okay.
Don't become a waitress at a famous bar for hot girls dancing on the bar.
Uh-huh.
Someone will do a story about this bar.
Uh-huh.
There will be a picture of you printed in the paper.
Yeah.
And even though your songs are good, you're hot, and your boyfriend's hot, ultimately, your father's coworker is going to cut out your photo from the newspaper, tape it to the wall of his toll collection booth, and your dad is going to find you, be very disappointed in you at first, and then ultimately, he's going to be happy that you're following your musical dreams and come to terms with the fact that you just can't fight the moonlight. Please reference the movie Coyote Ugly.
Hell no, H2O.
Piper Perabo and John Goodman.
John Goodman is in that?
Yes, he's the dad. He's the dad. I love him. He's so mad.
He's America's dad.
He's so mad at Piper Perabo.
She's got to fight for the moonlight.
Okay. That said.
Mm-hmm. All that helpful information.
In all honesty, here is what you need to do. And you need to get it right the first time, because when you are disappearing yourself, you have no second chances.
This
like,
is true.
This is it.
This is a pass fail.
Number one, pick a date.
That you're going to do it?
Yes.
Okay.
If you're really going to walk out your front door and say goodbye to your life, you need to have a date in mind. That way you have like a specific time set to prepare
okay.
for.
Okay. Right? Okay. All right.
Number two, cancel your contracts.
Okay.
So this may seem sus.
Sus. Suspect.
Suspicious.
Suspicious.
That's what the kids were saying, sus.
Are they?
As I saw
How often are they saying suspicious?
I saw it on Twitter.
How often are the kids talking about suspicious things?
I don't know, but you just say, I don't know, she's sus. It's okay. a thing. It's a thing now.
It's a thing. Okay, well, I say it now because I'm a fellow teen.
Okay, cancel your contracts and be ready to cut ties with your family. So your cable TV, your phone, your magazine subscriptions, pay off your debts. If you're fleeing from your debts already, that's one thing.
Right.
But if you really want to do this the right way with a clean break, pay off your debts and don't give anyone a reason to come looking for you.
Oh, that makes sense.
That's why you're like canceling all of your bills and things. So you're canceling your services.
Because it is a paper trail showing that you were preparing for something, but it also You're right. Makes people not have a reason to come after you. Okay.
In Japan, a lot of people are fleeing debt. But in America, that shit does not evaporate when you do. In America, debt collectors will like call your mom, call your grandma.
Yeah.
They'll text your nephew. They will freaking find you. So don't mess with them. And bounty hunters, they get their own television shows. So let's not even go into that.
They do.
And as far as your family goes, you cannot have your cake and eat it too. You can't just start a new life and stay in touch with them. Sorry, not sorry.
No, you can't. No, you can't.
It sucks to say it, but it's true. So don't even give them any hints that you're going.
Oh,
right?
That's awful.
And if you call them a year after you've disappeared from
wherever,
a phone booth.
Yeah.
Do those things even exist anymore?
They do, surprisingly. I saw one not too long ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Here in the city?
They're dirty, though.
Figure out your transportation. You have to get rid of your car or just leave it. Make sure it's paid off and then leave it in your driveway.
Yeah.
You cannot take your car with you. And I'll tell you why. Most modern cars have GPS trackers in them.
Oh, that sucks.
So what's the name of the person who comes to collect your car?
The impound lot
guy. I can't.
Guy.
There's like a, hang on.
The, I think his name is Terry.
Oh, it's the repo guy.
Oh, okay.
So I was listening to a podcast recently. They were interviewing a repo guy.
Okay.
Cars have built-in GPS systems into them. So if you stop paying your bills, the repo guy has access to where your car is GPS-wise. And it's so accurate that they can tell if your car is in a garage or if it's sitting in front of your house.
Jeez. Okay. So
you cannot take your car with you. You need to buy a new car.
And it has to be old, probably.
It has to be old. And you need to pay in cash. And something that doesn't stand out.
Okay.
So, like, not too old.
So, like, a 1995 like Geo something.
Something gray.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Like a sedan.
Like a sedan.
Right?
Like a gray sedan.
And you might also want to consider traveling to your new life via public transportation. This is an option, but just keep in mind it gives people more opportunity to see your face.
Which is a bad thing.
Which is a bad thing, right?
Okay.
Okay. Bring as little as you can. Traveling light is essential when you're finding a new identity.
Can I bring a pet?
It just puts you more at risk. I know.
Okay.
You're like wincing right now because you don't want to leave your babies behind.
Okay, but public service.
Yeah.
If you are planning on disappearing yourself, please make sure your pets have adequate care and someone to take care of them and love them before you go.
No, it's good.
Don't just leave them.
I mean, you need to bring as little as you can because you need to be able to slip in and out quickly of tight alleyways.
Okay.
You can't do this with a giant suitcase, right?
I do want to bring a dog. Dog will protect me. It's a wolf.
Yeah, but people remember dogs. If there's someone looking for you, like Bethany, what if you're on the run?
Damn it.
I mean, if you're not on the run, you have a little bit more flexibility. But if you're on the run, if you're Jennifer Lopez in Enough.
And I've had enough.
And your husband's a cop and he's trying to kill you.
Damn it. All right.
Right?
Well, there goes my Natty Gann dreams.
You need a plan. You need a place where you're going to live. You can't just go homeless without a plan.
Right.
You're more likely to be questioned by the police if you're living on the streets.
Correct. Yeah. Right? Good point. Yes.
And not having key things like food and shelter and heat and water, they're going to mess with your mind and you won't be thinking as clearly.
Oh, good point.
So for the first couple of nights where you're trying to figure things out, like maybe you want to invest in a tent. Maybe some water purifying pills, right?
Yeah.
And identify like a cheap and easy food source or rent a place that's off the grid where you can pay for it all in cash.
Yeah, love that.
Right? Like when you're first starting a new identity, you need to leave almost no paper trail. So if you're transferring money to like your new identity, I'm going to give some more tips about getting a new identity in a second. No paper trails.
Okay.
There's no evidence. And if you're thinking of transferring money from your old identity to your new identity, it needs to all be done in cash.
Okay.
And you can never travel with evidence on you. That means you cannot travel with a double set of identities. So you need to consider obtaining a new identity before you leave your first life.
Got it.
So let's get into how you get a new identity.
Yes.
Consider faking your own death.
Oh.
This is a whole other podcast topic on its own, but I read that a certain percentage of people that jump off the Golden Gate Bridge every year are just faking their own deaths.
Wait.
And they're later found alive and well. It's called pseudocide.
Wait, how do they fake it? So they don't actually jump?
Something like that.
That's crazy.
Pseudocide. It's faking your own suicide.
Oh my gosh, your poor family.
Your poor family. I know.
Okay.
So back to the name change.
Yeah.
In America, it's pretty easy to get a fake ID from somewhere, right?
Yeah.
At least a fake driver's license. You pick a new name.
I mean, I ordered a fake work ID online.
You did.
Because I needed to get my mail and she wouldn't give it to me.
You sure did.
And it looks great. It even has a little hologram on it. I think it cost me $20.
So you could do that. You could change your appearance and then like pick your name and pick a state. And, you know, it's not just like for getting drinks.
Right.
You could buy like a pretty decent fake ID online, right?
Yeah.
Or like in person. We live in New York City. I'm sure there are tons of underground places to like look up on the internet and have someone make you like a decent ID, right?
Should you do this?
No. But theoretically,
it is an option if you are looking to break the law and get a fake ID.
So once you have a new ID, you need to establish a paper trail.
Okay.
So the tough part is that you need to use basically cash.
Okay.
In the very beginning. In your new life, you need to use cash in every facet of your life until you're able to get your hands on a new Social Security number.
Okay. Because then that's when you can like get a J-O-B.
So you can buy Social Security numbers on the dark web. Ooh. And if you do, you're committing a serious crime, thus giving the authorities a reason to come after you.
But
Thus. Okay, whatever.
Thus.
You need to get a...
Sorry.
There's this blog I found when I was doing evidence. The guy's name is Kevin Evans. His site is Kev Evans.
Kevins.
KevEvans.com. He did a whole blog post on how to disappear completely and never be found. And it's a book by this guy. His name is Doug Richmond. And it was originally written in 1986. So some of the stuff is outdated, but some of it is relevant. And so this is what the book, How to Disappear Completely and Never Be Found by Doug Richmond. This is what it advises its readers on how to get a new identity in America. Millions of people in the United States are inadvertent phantoms. So basically what that means is their current identity is not the one that they started out with in life. Like people who were adopted from the foster care system. Mm-hmm. So they started their lives with a different name.
Sure.
And then they got adopted, but not many people think to kill the first identity.
Oh.
So that other first identity is just kind of floating there.
Oh.
And a lot of parents, when they adopt a child, they get new Social Security numbers for this new child, even though the child may have already had a Social Security number.
Oh, damn.
At least this is from this book in 1986.
Okay.
I think a lot of it is still true.
Probably.
I mean, Kev Evans. He did some research on this blog post. And so this is the information that he's saying is still relevant.
So if you don't necessarily want to choose your own name, you can find an existing name tied to an existing Social Security number. Okay, gotcha.
And then start using that.
That would be hard for me because I definitely want to choose my new name.
I know. I was thinking that too.
I don't want to like get some awful name that like someone.
I know.
I don't know. I don't even want to give an awful name because we probably have a listener and now their feelings are hurt. We need the listens.
So the second best way to come across an identity is to use a record of somebody who's died.
Okay.
Now, there's very little correlation between birth and death records in the United States.
Oh.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
And it's best if you can use the identity of someone who's died whom you knew.
Oh, gross.
So they list a couple of examples. War buddies. Like people you knew their lives. You knew about them. You knew what they were like. You knew their parents' names. You knew where they grew up. You knew like little anecdotes that they had shared with you. Childhood friends is another example of if you have a childhood friend who died, if you can get your hands on their information, that might be an identity you want to use. Headstones. If you're at the graveyard in any town looking at tombstones, these are usually the deceased's original names. like the date of birth, the date of death. Yeah. Sometimes it includes the names of the parents, the place of death. This is how you get an ID. Like, this is how you get information where if you go to the Social Security office and you're like, man, everything was stolen or everything was burned in a fire.
Yeah.
If you have enough information, like, you might be able to obtain a Social Security card for this person.
Have you seen the movie The Guest starring Dan Stevens from Downton Abbey?
Uh-uh.
He plays this kind of thing where they don't know if he is who he says he is or if he took the identity of a war buddy.
Newspapers, check the obituary section, particularly in small towns and rural areas, because they usually give much more detail about the deceased person's family, their age, their place of death, reason of death, and then you can investigate anyone of proper age who was born in a distant city.
Okay, sorry, maybe I'm dumb. So, but why are you choosing someone who's dead if it's been publicly notified that they're dead?
Because there's very little correlation between birth records and death records in the United States. So every time you look up someone's birth online in any sort of public database or any sort of private database, it doesn't automatically come up that they're also dead.
So you're just trying to find someone who's not also around to also be going by that name and social security number.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
It's not always the case that when someone dies, they let the Social Security office know. Like,
man,
you're grieving. You forget to do it, right?
Yeah, and maybe you also make friends with someone at the Social Security office.
Sometimes the funeral homes will let the Social Security office know, but sometimes it just kind of slips through the cracks. And this is how you get a new identity.
Okay.
So if you have your pick, you know, like you have a couple of identities that you can choose from, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's the Black Web or you're like somebody who died, the best names are those from the British Isles or Northern Europe. So pick somebody with like a British sounding name.
Oh, I wonder why that is.
Because you fly under the radar more easily.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, if you sound like you came over on the Mayflower,
yeah.
you may have more success assuming somebody else's identity.
Okay.
And restarting your life, right?
Yes.
But you need to know a lot of details about them. So you need to like look up as much as you possibly can. You need to check the education background. Hopefully they have a good background that'll help you get a job. Avoid identities that have any specialized training because you do not have that specialized training.
Like knife throwing.
Or like a Navy SEAL. Yeah, exactly. And if you can, at all times, avoid assuming the identity of someone who left behind a family.
Yeah.
You don't want ex-wives or kids or whomever is collecting the Social Security as the result of death to like be turned on to the fact that you're still using this number, right?
It's gotta be hard to figure out.
So once you have all of this new information, then you can go and get birth records.
It's so wrong.
So wrong.
But it makes sense. It's like building an entire life on a pre-existing life. It's like letting them do the work for you. It's like standing on the shoulders of giants.
And once you have some of these documents in place, you just go to the DMV.
And
you
get yourself
And you get yourself a driver's license.
And there you are.
Yeah.
And you have a new identity.
And then you have a new identity.
And then you move.
And then you move. So you have your new identity. You leave your old identity behind in your house. Don't take any of your papers with you. Only travel with the papers of your new identity. And then
that's that about that.
And then that's that about that.
Huh.
One of the key elements that we didn't touch on quite yet is that you need to change your appearance.
Yes. This is when you get to go brunette finally.
You have to change your appearance.
Yeah. Now remember, not everyone can pull off a pixie cut.
And it's a box of hair dye doesn't cost that much money.
No.
And in Japan, some of these people who vanish,
they
will go as far as to get like a nose job or something, like something that drastically changes their face.
Yeah.
Because the goal is to have somebody walking down the street that you knew in your previous life and them not even recognize you.
That's like me when I wear a hat. Unrecognizable.
But you should only change your appearance after you've already left your home, right?
Yeah. You don't want your mom to be like, why'd you dye your hair red there, Meredith?
Yeah, or you don't want to be like walking out of your house and your neighbor Bob is like, hey, you look different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, go to a motel.
Do it on the run.
Hair dye is easily applied in a motel bathroom. Get some clothes that don't look like you. Think of like a con man. The goal is for someone who knew you in your previous life to, you know, walk right by you and not recognize you. And if you were truly hiding from someone, have a costume change ready to go in your backpack.
You always should anyway.
So there's this crazy video on Wired.com. And Bethany, I think you've seen it. You told me about it.
This is my favorite video.
Yeah, Jonah Mendez, the former chief of disguise of the CIA.
Chief of disguise.
She describes disguising people as an onion. So whether you're building it up or peeling it off, a light disguise consists of maybe glasses, a wig, facial hair. Okay, so that's a light disguise. A heavy disguise is what you use for extended periods of time when you're up close and personal with someone. So
brunettism.
Think Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yes.
change your gender appearance. So if you're a woman, become a man.
Oh.
If you're a man, become a woman. Add some weight under your clothing, fake some breasts, fake broad shoulders, maybe use some makeup to seem older, that kind of thing, right? And there is a thing that the CIA uses. They are realistic masks.
Oh, it's so creepy.
And they do make them, and you absolutely cannot tell when someone is wearing them.
I don't understand that. And I watched this video, and she shows pictures of herself wearing a mask talking to a president.
Yes.
And I'm like, there's no way you would absolutely know. Why do we not have this technology in Hollywood and film? Because you can totally tell when someone's wearing a mask. Who has this technology? Government.
I think it was Reagan. And I'm going to include this video in our show notes from Wired.com. I think it was President Reagan that she was talking to. And she came in as like somebody who works in the CIA who was like briefing him on something. And then right in front of his damn face, she like lifts this mask off and she's like, ha, secret identity.
Scooby-Doo style. This is what blows my mind. And this is the same video. I get so turned on by this. Mm-hmm. This is the same video where they show it real time video of a guy walking down the street and completely changing his identity in a matter of like 12 steps.
12 steps.
Like he peels something off. It goes in a backpack. Earbuds go in. A hat goes on. And this comes off and he's walking and walking. And like by the time he gets to the end of the block, he's a different person.
A different person. Somebody that you would never be able to spot.
Never know.
So if you're going to live off the grid, like that's a different situation. And the formal definition of living off the grid is you're not on the public grid. Like you're not using public utilities. No electricity, no water, right?
Okay,
that's what the grid is. Yeah. Okay. So I don't want to get too much in depth into how to go off the grid, but this is all from WikiHow. You need to find a home that isn't on public utilities. You need to start thinking about solar panels, maybe a wind turbine, a hydropowered turbine if you live near running water. I mean, like you need to be able to power a home.
A tiny home, probably.
Yourself, right?
Yeah.
And you need a septic system. Everybody poops. You got to find a place, unless you're like digging holes in the backyard and burying it.
Yeah.
That might be problematic in certain terms of attracting animals.
True. And also you're going to run out of places to dig holes. You're eventually going to be redigging holes.
So, and you need to find a way to like collect rainwater and then sanitize it. You know, there's a system called the gray water system where things like shower water and dish water go into the system and they get cleaned and then you can reuse it.
Oh, nice.
I thought that was kind of cool.
That's great.
I mean, like, and you need a piece of property with like a working well and a system to clean that water and to run it through your house. So before you go off the grid, like you need to spend big bucks on a house that can do a lot of stuff.
Do they say how much bucks is big bucks?
Like a lot of these, each of these things is like 7,000 here, 7,000 there. Like you need like $100,000 plus whatever you're going to pay for the cost of the land or the house.
That's crazy because you think about going off the grid, you think of that as like when you have nothing. You just go off the grid, but you have to have like everything.
That's different because if you're going to go off the grid and that aspect, like you're going to live in a tent and you're going to forage for berries. And if you're really going off the grid in that way, you're taking showers in the river and you're hunting for your food and that type of thing. But there is this like theory that you can go off the grid, but still enjoy everyday society.
Okay. Gotcha.
You see what I mean?
Yeah,
so there's different levels. That is like another whole other podcast on its own.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
I did learn though that there are off the grid communities that you can join.
Okay.
And it probably is like one of these situations where if you don't ask, I'm not going to tell.
I'm not going to say anything.
So if you assume a new identity and you just go to live in this like off the grid community, they're not going to probe you. They're not going to probe
unless
you.
Unless you ask.
Because
consent is sexy.
The most important factor in all of this, tell no one.
No one.
Don't tell your lover. Don't tell your new best friend. Don't tell your cat. No one. Because it leaves you susceptible to blackmail, and then you just have to start all over again.
Oh.
Drop the mic. So, Bethany, I asked you before this podcast.
Yes.
For like a couple of details. If you are going to go off the grid, and I'm not talking like alter ego type thing.
Yeah.
If you were going to start a new identity, go off your current grid, maybe join another grid somewhere else.
Sidestep to a different vertical grid.
Whole new life.
Yeah.
Where would you go? What kind of name would you choose for yourself? If you were allowed to choose a name for yourself, what would you do with your life?
I would move to a small community in Wales.
Okay.
You know, a little town, like a quiet village.
Okay. In Wales.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Every day is like the one before.
Yeah.
It's like a little town. It's full of little people who are like waking up to say like, bonjour.
Okay.
Okay. So my name is...
But they speak Welsh.
Hello.
Okay.
My name is Freya Abigail St. John.
Is that a Welsh name? Like you want to blend in with people.
I don't know.
I'll pick a name for you.
Thank you.
Bronwyn.
Bronwyn St. John. Thank you.
Okay.
I just like the name St. John.
All right.
Okay. I wear glasses. They are too big for me. I am always pushing them up. I am a librarian. at a small university.
Okay, but Bethany, you're
I love my cats.
You're at a university. Here's you're trying thing, to stay under the radar.
But I have no. It's a small university. I'm in the back. I'm a librarian in the back. I have no family. They died tragically in a train fire when I was a baby. Okay. I was the only one who survived.
Okay.
I was raised by my aunt. She died tragically in a coach fire when I was 18.
Do you have a Welsh accent?
No, I'm.
You're an American. You're okay, displaced fine. American.
I live in Idaho.
Okay.
My name is Freya Abigail St. John.
Okay.
I wear glasses that are too big like, for me. I'm always pushing them up.
Katie Smith or something.
No, I want
Bethany, it's Idaho. You have to pick something like in the Midwest.
Fine. My name is Karen Arthur.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good. I like last names that are also first names.
Right?
That makes you seem unassuming.
Thank you. Uh-huh. I have no family. They died tragically in a car fire when I was an infant. So I was raised by my aunt who died tragically in a barn fire when I turned 18.
I'm having some deja vu.
I don't drive. I bike everywhere.
Mm. In Idaho? Is that possible?
Okay. You know what? You asked me a thing and I did that thing. And
Bethany,
I have poking holes in the thing.
I'm trying to play devil's advocate because I want you to succeed.
I drive a 1995 Geo Mazda sedan.
Okay.
Gray.
Uh-huh.
Four-wheel drive for the winter.
Okay.
I don't, I use a flip phone.
Okay.
I prefer handwritten notes.
There you go.
My email address is
a hotmail
and I have no family.
No family.
But I work at a small library at a small university.
No.
In Idaho.
But I'm going to tell you why in a second. But your first mistake is the small town.
Why?
Because people know everyone. People are more apt to be into each other's business, and you can't just blend in. It's a fallacy.
Okay.
It's a fallacy provided to us by romantic movies that you can just move to a small town and start over, because when you're actually trying to assume a new identity, like, it's better to be in a city.
What's yours?
Okay, this is what I would do. I would move to a different state in a new city. You can stay pretty anonymous in cities as opposed to small towns. We've already addressed that, right? And in a big city, you can still lead a relatively normal life with access to things like big shops and museums and restaurants, right? The type of things that keep you from feeling too isolated.
Yes, fair.
My city of choice is San Francisco.
Okay.
I'm going to change my name to Rosemary Thomas.
Why?
British.
Fairly.
You know, first name for last name.
Yeah.
Type thing. Okay.
Okay, it's a good name. You're Rosemary. I see that.
I would try to find work in a place that I didn't have to interact with a lot of people.
Oh,
so
good.
The back of a shop. Manual labor at a bakery. All right, it's San Francisco. Maybe I'm like loading loaves of sourdough into the fire oven or
totally.
Something. I would never work in a coffee shop because there are too many people that see your face every day. You're serving hundreds of people.
Fair.
Too many faces.
Too many faces.
Low-paying jobs let you build employment history under your new identity, right?
Okay.
I would live in a place where I paid cash only, but I would also have a mailing address at a place that I was paying cash only. So you can buy mailing addresses, right?
UPS and stuff.
Yeah. Yes, well, you can also go to the post office and like buy a P.O. box or whatever. But there are also like people who say for a small fee, like you find them on the internet, they'll say you can send mail to my address if you pay me like $30 a month or something.
How do you know they're not going to go through it?
You don't know.
Okay, I don't know.
I mean, is your shit open when you know, then it's time to like stop giving people that address, right?
Fair. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So low paying jobs let you build employment history under your new identity. And then after a while, let's say, I don't know, 2 years living your new life, you get a more permanent source of income. You get a little bit more money.
Yeah.
Like a job in an office.
Okay.
The trick is no social media.
Okay.
And never let yourself be photographed.
Oh, that's hard.
So if you can't get out of being in a photo without looking totally suspicious, cover your face. You cough by accident. You like duck.
It's amazing.
You get behind someone by accident. And I learned this from that 2008 film, A Simple Favor.
Starring Blake Lively.
And Blake Lively and Anna Kendrick. I don't want to give away the plot line. It's too new, but yeah. All right.
Okay.
So ultimately, in my new life, I'm in San Francisco, mm-hmm. right?
You're flipping sourdough.
The goal is to meet a rich man, widowed or divorced.
Yeah, preferably.
So he's not really suspicious of me. He's not really sus of me. He is just happy to have a new lover, right?
Right. And he's probably on the rebound. So he's probably still going through the non-existent stages of grief.
He owns a winery in Napa. So I move up to wine country with him, right?
Right, yeah.
We live in semi-solidarity.
Yeah.
We have a big piece of land. Of course, I go to town to buy groceries and clothing and stuff, whatever. But since I'm now the wife of a wealthy man and the owner of the exclusive Chateau du Drinkalot vineyard.
Drinkalot. It's French.
No one's going to question me.
Right.
And I live happily ever after in California, California casual,
uh-huh.
under the ruse that my whole family has died in a yachting accident.
Uh-huh.
And now my husband is my only family.
Except one day, what happens when Neil shows up and he's like,
oh, I forgot about him.
What the hell?
Ah, shit. Well, this was like if Neil wasn't around.
Okay, so if you kill Neil.
Yeah.
Which is probably going to happen anyway, let's be honest. Then, okay. All right.
So that's my thing. So that's how you start a new identity.
That's fascinating.
And to wrap up, I want to tell you some jokes. What do you call an identity-stealing spaghetti?
Oh, no.
An impasta.
Oh, God, I hate it when you do this.
What do you call a cat who steals someone's identity? An imposter.
No, it's the same punchline with a different emphasis.
What do you call the true identity of the Greek Spider-Man?
I don't know.
Peter Parker.
Okay. All
right. What do you call a nine-sided shape that won't reveal its real identity? A nonagon.
I'm going to...
What do you call a baker who has no identity? John Doe.
Oh, God, I hate my life.
What does a woman with a dissociative identity disorder tell her psychologist? Mm. Let me be frank with you.
That doesn't...
Where do I go when I'm struggling with my identity?
I don't want to.
You go to the bathroom and you look in the mirror. It's the best place for self-reflection.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so... Okay. Edit. Done.
Taste buds.
Yes. Yes.
We want to tell you about a new podcast.
So if you are interested in true crime and you're looking for your new favorite podcast.
Ooh, that's me.
Yes. Check out Silent Waves. It's a 7-part podcast series that tells the confronting true story of 26-year-old Raquel O'Brien as she attempts to liberate herself from the trauma of childhood sexual abuse and a father with a dark secret.
She records raw and brutally honest conversations with her family as they discuss the circumstances of their past for the very first time.
What emerges in the podcast is a larger story as they find the freedom to confront their conflicting versions of events and reconcile with their past and each other.
So if you already love the podcast Case Files.
Which I do.
Yeah, Bethany's a huge fan and I just got turned on to them.
Yeah.
Very cool. This new podcast that we're talking about today, Silent Waves, is being re-released by the Case File Presents team.
Their goal is to help Raquel's important story reach more listeners across the world. So Raquel O'Brien is using her personal experiences and interviews with professionals to try and heal the traumas that haunt her family. She's also trying to deconstruct societal taboos and demonstrate the power survivors hold by using their voice to reclaim their stories.
It sounds like there's a little bit of something that we could all take away and learn from this. So the complete 7-part series is out right now, Silent Waves, and you can binge it.
Find out why reviewers have called Silent Waves powerful, phenomenal, bravely confronting, and a must listen.
Download the Silent Waves podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We got a lovely email I wanted to read a couple days ago.
From a taste bud.
Her name is Jen. She said, hi, Bethany and Kathleen. I would love if you could shout out a taste bud for me. Last week, I moved cross country from Milwaukee to Phoenix with my husband of 2 months. This was a huge and scary leap for me, especially being so close behind our wedding. Immediately, I felt culture shock, stepping into a setting much more urban than the one I've known my whole life. I took to the podcast's infamous Facebook community to look for some words of guidance and validation. Within a few hours, one of the taste buds, I'm not sure if she wants her name revealed, came to my rescue.
Oh.
She's lived in the Phoenix area her entire life, obviously knows a lot about it. She validated my feelings, answered my questions, and gave me many suggestions for acclimating. She even spent an hour on the phone with me, calming me down and cheering me on. She made my first few days feel so much more comfortable. She even checked in to make sure things were looking up. I feel so glad to have been able to connect with her. This is exactly the kind of spirit that your podcast inspires, a real connected community. I just wanted to at least share this story and hopefully give this deserving bud a shout out. Thanks for all you do to spread happiness, togetherness, and community. That's from Taste Bud Jen. So I think it's okay to say the other woman's name. Her name is Susan. So
it's just so nice.
Shout out from Susan Jen to Susan Shenanigan for helping. That's so nice. They started out strangers and now they're friends. That's why we love our Facebook group.
God, I'm going to cry.
So nice.
I'm going to cry.
I mean, you can. Cry it up.
It just is nice to have communities. And that is why I love the internet. And I know that a lot of people are saying, like, the internet, it's this worst version of itself that it could possibly be because there's a lot of hate and
there's
stuff
a ton of it.
That goes on.
It takes me roughly 5 seconds, and I'm not even exaggerating, 5 seconds to log onto Twitter and immediately be depressed.
But it's these types of communities where people lift each other up that makes the internet worth it. Yeah, and when there's a natural disaster, you can do hashtag natural disaster and you can find out stuff that's going on and you're not in your natural disaster neighborhood.
That's true. And then you can spread those photos of sharks swimming in the floodwaters.
Yes.
Which is never true, by the way.
In Idaho.
Never true.
The sharks often get into floodwaters in Idaho.
They don't.
They love corn.
They don't. It's a myth.
They love, and you know that they often carry popcorn, traveling popcorn kits, and then they pop it up and watch, they watch movies.
Where did you even make this up?
I don't know.
Where... I'm going to punch you in the cuteness.
All right. I don't want to say that this podcast can predict the future, but I'm going to tell you right now, it is predicting the future.
How so?
A few episodes ago, I talked about this documentary that I saw called like Game Changer. It was on Netflix. It was about eating more plant-based, like athletes that eat plant-based, right?
Yeah, totally.
And so I made the declaration. Bethany, you're already a vegetarian. You're sometimes a vegan. And I said, I'm going to eat more plant-based. Blah, 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 blah. Facebook is saying that in the year 2020 in North America, a trending thing that's going to be happening is called flexitarianism.
Which is sometimes?
Mostly plant-based, but you still eat meat and dairy products and whatever from time to time.
Huh.
Flexitarianism. People in the U.S. are becoming increasingly aware of their impact on the environment, and in turn, they're eating more sustainably and cutting out animal product.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Pea protein is big.
I did not know that.
Pea protein is like something that people are looking up on Facebook. Plant-based diet is another thing people are looking up on Facebook.
Yeah. I think that it's really hard to do all or nothing. I was actually at my nutritionist today and we were talking about this, that you just need to listen to what your body wants.
Yeah.
And if your body is like, I don't really need meat today, then go for that. But if you decide I am 100% strict vegan, it leaves zero wiggle room for failure. And then all of a sudden you're obsessed with food and it's not healthy.
And this is from the official Facebook report that they put out, the 2020 topics and trends report from the Facebook IQ.
Yeah. Oh, that's scary.
There's a whole team of people working on this. Speaking of podcasts, pods to screen. So Facebook is predicting that a lot of the miniseries and TV shows and movies that we're going to see coming up in the year 2020 are things that have been adapted from podcasts.
That makes sense.
So I'm just right now, Hulu, if you're listening.
Yeah.
You can make a show about Bethany and I.
Totally.
It'd be excellent.
It'd be so good. People would love it.
I would love Mindy Kaling to play me.
Yeah, I would love to play me.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to be with Mindy Kaling.
You're an actress.
Can you imagine if I hired someone else to play me?
I forgot.
I think that makes sense. I mean, Laura did it a couple years ago. Laura became an Amazon show.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and Two Dope Queens got an HBO special.
They did.
So, yeah, makes sense.
Plant parents, the term being a plant parent.
I know parents who are parents of, humans get very frustrated when parents of pets call themselves parents, but I am one of those, and I also say that I have plant children.
So before I had pets, I used to think it was so pathetic that my best friend got a Mother's Day card from her husband from their dog. I was like, ew.
Yeah.
Stop it. You're not a mom. You own a pet.
Uh-huh.
But the second that I got an animal, I was like, I'm a cat mom.
I know. Dennis, for my birthday, Dennis gave me a birthday card, and then both cats wrote out their own birthday cards.
I saw that on your Insta story. Okay, first of all, your boyfriend, Dinas.
Yeah.
Dinas the dentist. He's very thoughtful. I mean, just to get two separate birthday cards and different handwriting in each and write them from each of your cats to you on your birthday from their perspectives.
He has their voices. He said that
amazing.
Minerva, it had been years since Minerva wrote cursive and she wasn't sure if she'd even remember how to do it, but it was very sweet.
Speaking of this parents thing, indoor gardens are trending and now people are looking to add them to their urban spaces.
Yeah.
It's going to be bigger in Canada than it is in the US, but our brothers and sisters upstairs, it always trickles down.
Yeah. And I think people are really wanting to get back to nature and understand that we're supposed to be in tune with nature. And so even if we live in cities, having green things in our homes is really important.
See, you have so many plants in your apartment, but how do you get the cats to not eat them? Or they just don't?
They're not terribly interested. The lily is poisonous to cats, and so I keep that one up high. Everything else is not toxic for them, but I also, there's this bitter apple spray that I'll spray. Loki tries to eat this one fern.
Yeah.
And so I'll just spray it on the leaves, and that usually he leaves it alone.
Mm-hmm. I see. That's why I'm afraid to get plants.
But a lot of my plants are fake. I have a lot of fake
greenery,
higher quality fake topiaries and stuff that
they're just plastic.
Totally plastic. Yeah. Because I don't want to risk them being hurt. And like, I remember my cat Oliver was really into eating plants, so I just didn't really have him around. I just had a lot of fake ones because his health was more important.
I caught my cat in the Christmas tree this weekend.
Which one?
Sure, Juno. He's the cuddliest, most loving, absolutely worst cat ever. Bad breath, gets poop everywhere. Bethany, my husband was away this weekend on vacation with his friend, and I woke up, turned my head, looked at his empty side of the bed, and there was just poop smeared everywhere.
All over.
Everywhere.
Just like a paintbrush.
I hate that cat.
No, you love that cat.
I love him, but he's the worst.
I mean, he's a little boy. He's growing up. He'll be okay. as we are winding up the episode, don't forget we have merch out, dftba.com. That's don't forget to be awesome, dftba.com. And then just search Acquired Taste Podcast. You will find our merch. Otherwise, it's also up on our socials.
And our website, acquiredtastepodcast.com.
The big seller is definitely the Introvert Club sweatshirt.
It is
by far kicking ass on everything else that's on the merch line.
I can't wait for that to arrive in the mail for us. It's going to be awesome. Also, next week is our Christmas episode.
Yes.
So if you haven't already, submit your funny plot lines for Hallmark movies. And we're going to read them sort of in the style of our Ghost Stories episode with like some music production behind it. And so as funny as you want, as short as you want, just go ahead and send us some emails.
Because as we learned, Hallmark needs to like step into the century.
Yeah.
And we've always known they need a little bit more diversity. So tell us what your Hallmark story is.
Get with the times, Hallmark.
Yes.
All right. I know what I learned this week.
What'd you learn this week?
Cinnamon is really just a sawdust.
Well, what do you mean? It comes off a stick.
Yeah. And so it's like bark. And so what's sawdust? It's like wood that's been ground up.
Oh, you're not wrong.
I'm not wrong. So a cinnamon stick is the inner layer of bark derived from these like trees.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, these cinnamomum trees. I don't even want to try and pronounce that, but the cinnamon stick is like dried, rolled up bark. And so when you ground it, it's sawdust.
It can also attract unicorns. Did you know this?
Okay.
When I was in high school, I had sticks of cinnamon hanging over my bed to attract unicorns in my dreams.
No, you didn't.
Sure did.
No, but you didn't.
I did. I promise.
Is that a thing?
I mean,
that people do?
I did. I don't know. I mean, it attracts unicorns, allegedly.
A delicious thing to do for the holiday season. Mason jar, vodka, cinnamon sticks,
ooh,
one or two, right? Cut up apples. Boom.
Oh,
put it all
yes.
in there. Make your own apple cinnamon vodka.
I am not wrong. Unicorn magic. Awaken to mystical energy. Hold the cinnamon stick in your open hands, cupped and facing outward, and numerous sensational sparkle.
What do you have to hang over your bed to get a hot guy to come up? Or a hot girl, whatever.
I think panties.
Dirty panties?
No. Ew.
Bethany, what'd you learn this week?
I learned that sometimes bangs on people with naturally curly hair do look good.
Yes, of course.
I always thought that there's no way they could, but I've seen many people cross my path this week with naturally curly, very curly hair and bangs, and I'll be damned if it doesn't look good.
Yeah, it's like a texture thing. It looks amazing.
It looks amazing. My sister has very curly hair. She has been asking, should I get bangs? I keep saying no. How dare you?
Yeah.
And then now I'm like, maybe you should.
I think she should.
She has a cowlick is the problem. I also learned I have a new cowlick. How often do you get new cowlicks?
Oh, have you been sleeping on like one side of your
head? Is that what causes it? Right where, let's say I were to part my hair on the side.
Yeah.
And then like the back quadrant of my head, like that's suddenly a cowlick. The hair goes here and there and everywhere. Well, it's willy-nilly.
As you get older, sometimes the texture of your hair changes and new things pop up.
No one asked me if that was okay with this.
Yeah, I've got like a little cowlick in the back of my hair. If I let my hair air dry, you can see it more.
What the hell are you supposed to do with that?
I don't know. What was that movie with that girl, the little redhead from the 80s? With
Annie.
The real curly hair. Not Annie. Curly Sue.
Oh. Yeah.
She had bangs, didn't she?
You know what? She probably did. She was really good at flipping out cards.
Yes, she did. Bangs look great on Curly Sue. You should
tell
your sister to bring a picture of Curly Sue
to
get her hair done. That seems like a good idea.
I think so. The problem, she said, is she has a cowlick right where her bangs are.
Oh.
So that's a problem. And because it's curly, you can't blow dry it in the direction you want it to live. Anyway, hair is a whole thing.
Have you ever brought a celebrity pick to get your hair done?
Of course I have.
When I was a kid, I used to bring Lucy Camden.
Who's she?
Seventh Heaven, Beverly Mitchell.
Oh my gosh.
But Beverly Mitchell as Lucy Camden. She had some really good, like,
the winged hair look?
No, the thick bangs with like the face frame, the long face frame.
Love that.
And now I usually bring pictures of the Olsen twins.
You just have not changed.
I just like that wispy, just like a little wispy short.
I bring Kate Gosselin.
Ah.
Because I really like the really sleek look in the front, but I definitely want some spikes in the back. Mm. Like, I want a porcupine in the back, mm-hmm. but I want a sleek bob in the front.
So, businesswoman in the front.
Porcupine in the back.
Zookeeper in the back.
Right. And if I could get some, like, half inch to inch wide caramel streaks down it, some like highlights, but as though like someone just like,
Bethany, I'm from Jersey, like I had highlights like those,
like some Kelly Clarkson when she won American Idol style chunk highlights,
from Kelly to Justin,
yeah, where she had red hair but platinum highlights.
You know, her show apparently, like, her, have you seen her daytime talk show yet?
Not yet.
It apparently is doing so well.
Good for her. She's very likable.
She is like number three behind I think it's
Ellen, maybe
Ellen, and then Ryan and Kelly.
Really,
she is beating everybody that
Good
I didn't
for her.
That's not mentioned.
She's an icy. She deserves it.
She's doing great, apparently.
Kathleen, where can people find you on social media?
I am at WebGirlKathleen on everything.
I am Radio Bethany on Twitter, Miss Bethany Watson on Instagram. This is your weekly reminder to take a deep breath.
And if you would like to enter a giveaway.
Yes.
We're doing a giveaway. The aforementioned merch collection that we have. We're giving away one of our Introvert Club sweatshirts. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is rate, review, subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen.
Yep.
Be that iTunes or Spotify, wherever you listen.
Yep.
Take a screenshot of your review. So if you've left us a review in the past, you know, 5 stars.
Yeah.
That helps.
That helps.
Take a screenshot of your review from the past. Email us at acquiredtastepodcast@gmail.com. And we're going to take those submissions. Put them in an online random generator and send a sweatshirt to one lucky listener.
Yes. And if you've not reviewed us yet, do so and then send a picture of that. And again, 5 stars really helps. You can obviously do whatever you want, but, you know, say whatever you want. Say that you like the cut of our jib, mm-hmm. and then send that on over.
Cut of our jib.
You like the cut of our jib.
Is that a piece of meat?
I don't actually know what that means.
Is that like a filet mignon?
I've always heard it and I never understood it.
You like the cut of our plant-based seitan.
Yeah, you like the cut of our Impossible Burger.
Mm.
You can follow us on social media.
On Twitter, @AcquiredPodcast.
On Instagram, @AcquiredTastePodcast.
You can follow us on Facebook. All you have to do is look up Acquired Taste Podcast. The fan group comes up too and you search us there.
You can find us as a P.O. Box. You can send us things. An Acquired Taste Podcast, P.O. Box 1717, Hoboken, New Jersey, 07030.
And if you want to leave us a voicemail, we play them at the end of every episode. And God, I love the voicemails
so much.
They're
so great.
Our number is 917-994-0353.
All right. Is that everything?
We covered it all.
Okay.
BB, happy belated birthday, my friend.
Thank you, Kathleen. I love you. Thank you again for the gifts.
Oh,
I love
you're
them.
Quite welcome.
Taste Buds, here is what you had to say this week.
Hi, Bethany. Hi, Kathleen. It's Mika. Bethany, happy birthday! I wanted to tell you something, and it might be a little TMI, but you know what? It's okay. We're past that now. My husband was like, hey, you want to have a quickie? And I was like, no, I'm not really in the mood. And he was like, maybe you should download that Furly app so then to get you in the mood. And I started cracking up because, oh my God, can you imagine? Oh, God.
Hi, Bethany. Hi, Kathleen. This is Caitlin calling from New York. I wanted to call because your past episodes where you've talked about imposter syndrome in the workplace and in your career have hit so close to home for me. I struggle with any confidence whatsoever, and I have struggled in my role as a supervisor, supervising other women because I am easily overshadowed by others. And today, I wanted to call and share a success with you. If you only share the bad stuff, you're only putting the bad stuff out into the world. You have been so inspiring and so instrumental in my own journey of figuring out how to not feel like an imposter in my own body. So I wanted to call and let you know that I had great success today with overcoming my imposter syndrome and being able to find the firmness while still remaining true to myself and being kind in who I am. And I was so excited afterwards. You were the first people to pop into my head about sharing it with. So thank you for setting the example of being confident women who are also real about what it is to struggle. You have been absolutely inspirational, and I will never, ever stop listening. So keep putting those podcasts out, ladies. Thank you for everything. Happy holidays.
Hello, ladies. I am having a sexy day because of you. I have been with you since day one, and I'm so proud of you and love the topics that you bring up. And I made the mistake of listening to today's episode, the audio porn episode, while on the elliptical trainer at the gym. I laughed so hard I almost fell off. And in addition, I was picturing the two of you making Dennis and Neil lip sync the words to Tristan, and it just hilarity ensued in my crazy head. Anyway, keep up the great work, and I have a movie title for you for Hallmark. You have to write the script, but all kinds of visions are dancing in my head. It's called The Transtonica Express.
Hey, ladies. I just wanted to call and say happy birthday to our Bethany. And I also wanted to say that I accidentally made a mistake when I sent your gift. I accidentally put it under Kathleen. So, Kathleen, if you pick it up and think it's for you, sorry. If you apologize, that gift is for Bethany. But anyway, happy birthday to you. Hope you have a great time. And again, Kathleen, I am such a jerk. Sorry about that.
Hey, Kathleen and Bethany, it's Vanessa. And I'm so embarrassed about something. And the first thing that I thought to do was go onto the Facebook Acquired Taste podcast group and just tell everybody about it. Last night, me and my husband were getting hot and heavy, and things got interesting, and long story short, a vibrator got stuck in my butt. And me and my husband ended up spending about maybe 15, 20 minutes trying to collectively get it out of my butt. I was so super duper embarrassed that the first thing that I wanted to do was just tell all my taste buds. So, thanks for making a safe haven. Love you guys. Bye.
Hi, this is Molly from Connecticut. Just wanted to tell Bethany a very happy birthday. I hope you've had a wonderful day. Love you both.
Hi, ladies. It's Sharon from Ohio, longtime listener. And I just wanted to tell you guys how much you guys and the Facebook group has really helped me this year. I found out my daughter that I gave birth to in July had truncus arteriosus, and she had to have surgery at 30 days old, open heart surgery, and listening to your podcast and the Facebook group just really, really was there for me and helped me get through this crazy thing. And just want to let you know my little girl is rocking. She's 5 months and beautiful. Thanks to you guys for giving me the strength that I needed.
Hi, Kathleen and Bethany. This is Etta. I'm listening from Orlando, Florida, but I'm originally from upstate New York. I just wanted to call and share with you a kind of funny moment I had. I was listening to your most recent podcast earlier today, the one where you were talking again about Tracy's dog, and I actually just got out of a relationship like literally a week ago, and yesterday decided to treat myself to an Amazon purchase of a new vibrator, because who doesn't need that after a really terrible breakup? And it came today, pun not intended. I also wanted to thank both of you for doing what you're doing. I've been experiencing probably the most severe bout of depression in my life. Having you guys on in the background has been enormously helpful.
Hey, it's your good friend Tequila, your favorite taste buds. We, me and my many personalities, are wishing you the best of holidays, happiest of holidays, and everything wonderful that this new year can bring you.
Hi, Bethany and Kathleen. This is Taste Bud Stephanie. This is my first time calling, but a long-time listener. I'm listening to the Uncanny Valley episode, and Kathleen just asked Bethany if she would have a sex doll of Dennis. And there is a Black Mirror episode that is, like, kind of similar, and it's super freaky, but I thought you guys would love it, because it kind of, there's not really, like, the uncanny aspect into it, but it is freaking weird. Anyway, I hope you guys have a great day, and